Hello and welcome to episode 293 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is February 21st, 2022. I'm Rollo McFlugel. With me is my co-host Slappy Jones for this Get On Zero installment number 12. We are at a dozen of these so far. My, how time flies. But joining us is Buddha Hoddle. Welcome to the Get On Zero series, Buddha.
Hello, hello. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So why don't you tell us why you're on the show? Because you actually kind of reached out to us to get on and talk about stuff.
Yeah.
Was it your affinity for tractors or?
No, it wasn't. It was this idea of On Zero. I've been kind of down the rabbit hole through JW's stuff on the 10 hours of Bitcoin. And so I saw he was, I think, the first one on this. So that kind of brought this whole you guys' show into my awareness, mostly through that. And have been legitimately on Zero for about, you know, half a year now or so, more or less, like getting there. I was thinking about this today. Prior to being on Zero on Bitcoin, I was kind of on Zero in another way, in that I had a Roth IRA as a savings account that I would put money into. And then I had Robinhood as a checking account. I would just take any cash that I had and put it into Robinhood and buy S&P 500. And so in some ways it made sense to me, this Get On Zero business, in the same way. Now I just have, you know, Bitcoin as a savings account and then Cash App or Strike as a checking account. So that's what I've been up to, and kind of rolling out of the Roth IRA, putting more and more into this, to now where over the last couple months I can say, okay, I don't have, yeah, I might be more long Bitcoin than most people, because I'm not a homeowner currently. So it's like, if it goes up 10%, I'm worth 10% more. If it goes down 10%, I'm worth 10% less. So that's where I'm at presently.
That's really interesting. Haven't heard someone kind of give that background yet. So I like that. So was it when you were doing the thing before the Bitcoin stuff being basically on Zero, were you motivated by like any sort of like political understanding of what was going on with inflation? Or was it more just like, hey, this is just, I'm better off doing this?
I think it was, maybe subconscious. I was kind of oriented towards some understanding of the negatives of fiat and the kind of the problems that go with that. I was tuned into, maybe around 2012, was interested in what Ron Paul was saying in the Republican primaries and so on, but not like fully into, you know, like I didn't have any kind of motive. Like, I'm really sticking it to the dollar by not trying to hold this, but I just, you know, you buy these tech stocks or S&P 500 or whatever, and I was much better off from doing that. So maybe a little bit of an awareness that, you know, inflation is a problem, but more so just kind of de facto doing that at that point.
Nice. And because I think that's important for helping us with Bitcoin, because I don't think most people are necessarily going, I mean, I don't know now, the last 2 weeks or so with what's going on with Canada and how they're just shutting off people's bank accounts without due process and everything is just insane. But yeah, before that though, and I still think it holds true, is that we don't necessarily need people to have some sort of, you know, orange pilling moment, if you will, or understanding exactly what the Fed's doing for them to adopt Bitcoin. It's just number go up. It's they're right. Better off that way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, you know, I got pulled into Bitcoin a little bit because of number go up. And, you know, I've heard JW say a couple times he bought some, you know, first took a big bite into Bitcoin around the top in 2017. And what I did was do the opposite, which was probably even worse. So I was buying Bitcoin as, you know, just flipping it on Coinbase and buying it, you know, and selling it, you know, weeks apart or days apart, and sold most all of it close to the top then, and just kind of watched it be below that level for the next couple of years, kind of kept my eye on it. But I kind of thought that I had like outsmarted a Ponzi, basically. I saw this thing rocket up and sold it and thought, okay, well, that's good. And didn't really get interested in it again until it moved price-wise up above the price that I had sold it at. So I missed out on a lot of opportunity to be buying when I thought I had outsmarted this thing, basically. So
that's interesting. So what was kind of, was that back in like 2017 when it first exactly. went to 17? Yeah.
How yeah. 2017.
Yeah. Well, cool in the sense of a cool story that I haven't really heard.
Well, it's a good warning, I think, for people, yes. you know, to if you do, you know, so there's somebody out there right now that has sold the top at 60 some thousand dollars and thinks they're doing really well. So, yeah.
So was it that it came back up to that price that you thought was the kind of the end of the Ponzi that made you like, what caused you to get back into Bitcoin?
I kept seeing this thing not die. Like over years, I kept seeing it kind of hover around 10K, and then I don't know, March of 2020, maybe it went down pretty far. And I thought, okay, well, this is my chance. If I did want to buy at a reasonable level, I should do it then. But I didn't. And I waited until it went back up to around 2017 levels before kind of panic buying, I guess you could say. But at this time, I thought, like, okay, well, this time around, I'm going to be smart about this and dig into what this thing actually is and understand it. And then the connection that I had previously with some kind of audit the Fed and the Fed kind of mentality that I had, it kind of clicked for me quite late. But I realized, like, okay, well, you know, this part of it was actually doing, you know, running a full node and opening Lightning channels and stuff like that that I found to be pretty kind of mind opening in terms of like, oh, I can, you know, do whatever I want with this. I can send it to, you know. So I think that changed it for me, was being orange pilled, I guess, would be having my own coins, not just definitely not on proxy through Robinhood or even just proxy through some exchange, but just messing around with it. And I'm not the most technical person, but there's enough, you know, YouTube university out there to pretty much figure stuff like that out. So so yeah, I guess I'm just a price driven just a whore for the number go up. But yeah, no, I have dug my heels in over the last, you know, year or so, and feel like I'm gonna ride or die with this, and have moved then all my savings into it. So I feel like yeah, it could be a mistake. You know, maybe in a couple of years, I'll think, oh, I shouldn't have done this. But for right now, and it feels better to me to be owning this than to be owning some conglomerate of the U.S. stock market. As part of my ideology would be against some of these companies, you know, Coca-Cola, Nike, or those groups. Like, I don't really care for them. So it does feel nice to not be a part of that ecosystem either.
The other thing about it too is that, and you kind of mentioned it, is that, you know, you actually control what's going on. Like when you mentioned, you know, using the Lightning Network and everything, and even just, you know, on chain Bitcoin, I mean, you're taking control of your money, and mm-hmm. no one else is managing it for you. And
for sure.
And it's one thing, it's you have this like light bulb eureka moment when you first spend Bitcoin and receive it, and you realize, holy cow, like mm-hmm. I did that peer-to-peer. And then when you onboard to Lightning and you go, holy cow, I just sent someone money basically instantly, and like it's real Bitcoin that got sent there. Yep. But we don't have to wait 10 minutes and, you know, right. all that stuff. It's I that's what I wish more people could experience that and understand it, because it's wildly different than what we've all grown up with.
Mm-hmm.
Really. I mean, when was the last time people actually custodied their money?
Right.
I don't know, maybe my grandparents did a little bit, but
yeah. Sure. I don't know what your experience has been in terms of like introducing people to Bitcoin. I feel like that process doesn't happen for someone who, you know, they download Moon Wallet or some kind of blue wallet or something, and you send them 5,000 sats and they think, oh, okay. And they put it back in their pocket. That light bulb doesn't seem to go off for people I've talked to and say, here, I can send you $5 right now. It's not, it's kind of like, maybe that is just the people I've talked to, but it did, for me, it was the process of owning it and being able to send it made a big difference. I think Lightning itself, yeah, I don't really use it that much, but it was cool to be able to set that up.
Yeah, I think you're right, because it was a little bit different. I mean, Slappy and I got in and we didn't know what we had, like, back in 2014. And you had to run a full node in order to, you know, have a wallet. So, you know, I think I had used the multi-bit wallet, which was just, I think it was just a reskinned Bitcoin Core. Maybe Slappy, I know you have good stories, probably better than my way of remembering it. But, you know, you had to sit there and wait for it to, wait for everything to sync up, and then, you know, you got the Bitcoin to you, and it was kind of had that weird feeling like, man, if I mess something up here, it's all gone.
But it was thrilling. Like, I still remember sitting in my old house back on my deck, like waiting for it to sync up. And when it did, and then you send Bitcoin to it and you're like, this is cool. But I didn't know what it was. Like, it was such a great feeling to see it in your wallet. It's like, I did it right. It's there. But then I still don't know anything, but I didn't know anything about security back then. And so it was always this concern, like, there's hackers going to steal it. And, you know, it's just a long learning process over the years. But I still get a thrill when I set up a Lightning channel.
Yeah. Oh, it's, you know, I'm diving a little bit more into Core stuff, Bitcoin Core stuff recently, and, you know, setting up a offline instance of Core where I create the private keys, and then I create a watch only wallet on my online node, and can, you know, receive Bitcoin there, and then ferry partially signed Bitcoin transactions back and forth. Yeah. And do it on the command line, and it's so much fun. And nice. it's such a great feeling.
That would be fun.
It's not that hard. I mean, there's some good information out there, good walkthroughs or good good resources. And really, it's one of those things where you just
got to do it, right?
The more you do it, the more used to you get to it. And then the if you use the Bitcoin GUI, Bitcoin Core GUI, if you go and click on the window menu and go click on console, it's basically like a less scary looking version of the command line, where you type in the commands and that's a good place to play around.
Messed around in there, which was been a little while, but that I would really get into that. That was fun, just because it felt like I was a real computer person for a little while.
Oh yeah, that's yeah. Typing on that black background, white type font screen makes you, even though it's the same three commands every single time, makes you feel cool.
Yep.
But Buddha, getting back to you and your story, one of the things that people, not so much anymore, but, you know, where everyone's getting their tax forms mailed to them right now. But in the beginning of, you know, doing the get on zero thing, everyone goes taxes, capital gains, taxes, taxes, taxes. But you've been doing this for a while before. I don't know how long you were doing it before, you know, Bitcoin, but have you gone through that capital gains process for the way you were managing your money before Bitcoin?
Yeah. I mean, I was paying short-term capital gains tax on different stuff. Sometimes I had So I had a kind of understanding that like you make more money if you're paying some capital gains tax on something, it means you have made a gain. So, but you know, since I've been doing this with Cash App mostly, I haven't had to sell anything yet since I'm making more than I spend and I'm just rolling over on a credit card my expenses. So I haven't had to sell any Bitcoin on that yet, but I imagine it would just be the same, that the whatever the exchange is does calculates it for you. Right. That's the way Robinhood was doing it for, you know, I did have the kind of Bitcoin IOU stuff on Robinhood. I think they're letting people withdraw, or there's some wait list for people to get their coins off of there. But at that time there definitely wasn't. So, anything that I bought and sold on there, I paid taxes for, just with the rest of the Robinhood stuff.
Yeah, and so I suppose that you didn't die as a result of that.
No, I haven't died. Not yet. No. I might die when I see what my bill is for taking out all of my Roth IRA and putting it into Bitcoin. I'm not sure what that's going to look like, but
yeah, I just
withdrawal penalty. Yep.
I just
10% automatic, right? The withdrawal penalty, and then you pay taxes as income.
That's how I understand it. Ordinary income, yeah. Whatever bracket you're in.
Yeah, I just liquidated an IRA to put it all into Bitcoin, and it was basically the one I've had for most of my working life.
Oof. So,
but when I did it, I decided it was like the second week of December, and so I only liquidated half.
Mm-hmm.
And then waited until the beginning, very beginning of the year, and liquidated the second half so I could push that tax bill between two years.
That makes sense.
Bracket, yeah. And you figure, I mean, you know, I guess everyone's calculations can be whatever they want, but, you know, if you had, let's just say, $100,000 in there and you're going to let that collect interest in whatever funds you're invested in over the next 20 years or however long, and say you got half of it, which you're probably going to get more than half of it, I would think, but maybe about half depending on your tax bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Is that better to put that in Bitcoin today? I mean, I guess that's up to anyone to decide, but I would say so. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That was kind of my calculation. And two, there's a lot of services that allow you to do like self-directed IRAs and stuff. That you keep it in that kind of legal status, but you can buy Bitcoin and with it and actually hold your own keys in a lot of cases. But then you have to kind of weigh in the risk and threat of the government doing taking weird it. Stuff yeah. about. Yeah.
Having unrealized cap gains tax at you or something like that. Yeah.
Right. And I was originally going to, like, I realized, or actually my friendly insurance guy who was managing my IRA for me, that in the beginning I said I didn't want to liquidate it because I like him, and you know, it was a stupid reason for me not to want to liquidate. But he actually texted me at one point. He says, "Hey, by the way, you know that you've got 60 days to do something, or to like get that into whatever you're going to do if you want to roll that into like a Bitcoin IRA thing."
Mm-hmm.
And I was considering doing that because I was still within my 60 days to avoid all the taxes on it. But then I thought, you know what? The way I like, the future is very uncertain with that kind of stuff. And sure. Then especially after the stuff in Canada going on with these truckers and just, hey, you're on the wrong side of this political issue and mm-hmm. just bam, we're going to just try to destroy you. I felt more comfortable paying a massive tax today and being able to hopefully kind of just not have to deal with that side of things anymore with it. Like, that Bitcoin's mine.
Mm-hmm.
There's no current legal thing that they're going to be able to, you know, do something weird with and say all of a sudden I owe them a huge tax. Now, of course, they could try to tax unrealized capital gains with just the Bitcoin, but it definitely does lower that lower the attack surface. by not right. having it on in some sort of thing like that. So
I think maybe you had mentioned, or maybe it was Slappy on this show, one of these On Zero episodes, talking about having this feeling of just like this kind of nagging feeling of, I should liquidate that and put it into Bitcoin. The Roth IRA was the last thing to go for me, but the feeling of not having that kind of nagging feeling of like, oh, I should just put it all in that. That would be the, like, you know, not having to worry about that is kind of nice. I've seen the price go up since I've been really heavy into Bitcoin, and seen it gone down since I've been on Zero. And that, it doesn't bother me as much because I have this feeling of, okay, I've kind of put both my feet on the ground with this. Like I'm on this path. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I don't have to have this feeling of like, I really should just, you know, do XYZ to get more Bitcoin. So if it pumps, I'm not going to have that feeling of like, when it did before, a feeling like, oh, I really haven't prepared for this, or I'm, you know, short on this. So that's a good feeling, I think.
There's not many people I've ever talked to that regretted buying Bitcoin, but certainly there's everyone regrets not buying Bitcoin.
Sure.
So you want to talk a little bit about how you're managing your strategy? Like what are you doing to, what do you do? Like, you're on Zero. That's everyone's question. Like, well, you have to pay bills and all
that. Yeah. I have a job that pays me in fiat. I have a credit card that is all right. Maybe I've thought about, I was using like the Fold card at one point as a debit card. And ended up finding it not to be really worth it. Easier to use a credit card and then pay it down at the beginning of the month, or whenever I get paid once a month. So pay that off, put the rest directly into Cash App and buy Bitcoin. I think, you know, Strike is probably better. I probably could have saved a couple $100 just on the fees over these months, but Cash App has been super easy. Strike has been buggy for me. I had some payment that got rejected on there, or my bank bounced it, and so Strike locked me out, but I still ended up with the Bitcoin. So I still need to, I think I owe, like, you know, a couple $100 to Strike before I can get back to using it. But it's pretty simple. I mean, it's dummy easy. I don't spend more than I make, and then I just put everything else into Bitcoin. And so I do, maybe the thing that I haven't figured out yet is how much do I really want to be keeping on any one of those exchanges, like Cash App, for example. Like, what's an acceptable amount to keep on there? How much do I trust that Cash App is not going to choke me on the withdrawals, or that you know, it becomes, you know, more and more difficult to withdraw. So that's something I haven't figured out yet. But just in terms of having zero fiat, I mean, I still have a banking account with the same account I had before. I have a credit union account, and both of those numbers on both those accounts say zero. So those are just the off ramp. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, there are some nuances between exchanges. I know Cash App is, they have, actually, let me open it now, because from what I remember, they kind of have lowish withdrawal limits for Bitcoin.
Right.
Let's see. Withdrawal $2,000 per day, $5,000 per week is at least what I'm allowed to withdraw. And, you know, if Bitcoin starts ripping up,
yeah,
you know, you could potentially, like, never get all of your Bitcoin off of it. But the way I look at it, like, generally speaking, because I just started using Level a few weeks ago, and they're going to be really, like, the first exchange where I'm going to, like, purposefully leave some Bitcoin on there because it's going to be my checking account.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it feels weird to do that because for all of our Bitcoin lives, it's been not your keys, not your coins, never leave your money on the exchange. But we were using Bitcoin in a little bit different, a different way back then when those were our mantras. So for me, it's like, well, how much money am I willing to leave in a regular, in like my normie checking account?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of something like if I'm comfortable leaving, you know, X amount of dollars in my credit union, then I should be kind of willing to leave the same amount. Or at least go through the same thought process of how much I should leave on something like Level or Strike or Cash App. But I think understanding like now with Bitcoin, it like kind of reset myself a little bit. So to me being like, I left how much money in my credit union's checking account for all that time?
Right.
Like, what was I, crazy back then? So that number is certainly lower now than it was, you know, before Get On Zero. But, you know, I think it's something that every individual's got to manage themselves. And, you know, I know what expenses I have every month. I got a mortgage to pay. I got my credit card bill, and the credit card bill changes, but I can kind of see that piling up throughout the month. And then a couple other ACH transfers that'll come out of it. So, you know, I get paid twice a month. It's probably reasonable for me to leave a paycheck's worth of Bitcoin on there. Maybe a little bit more, give it a buffer in case the price drops. But, you know, worst case scenario, you need Bitcoin on in the next 10 minutes and, you know, transaction fees have been pretty low. So,
right.
But, that actually brings up another thing. See if we could pick your brain about a little bit, like what, like that situation, you know, you have to send some Bitcoin to your checking account to pay maybe a big bill comes and the price drops or something, so you need to dip into some savings to be able to account for that. Like I use Yeti Cold as my cold storage, 3 of 7 multi-sig, and that's supposed to be a pain in the butt to get. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to have to like geographically get some keys and then, you know, wipe this computer I'm on right now so I can reinstall Ubuntu and everything. Right. So for like the smaller, like not like a phone wallet, I treat like a physical wallet. Like, you know, I'm not going to keep $4,000 on my phone, because I'm not going to keep $4,000 in my, you know, wallet with my credit cards and stuff. But so there has to be like an intermediate thing that's like, you know, you can keep a decent chunk of money on, but a way that it's not like really horrible to try to access in case you need money like that day. Have you gone through that thought process or have a strategy at all with how you want to manage that?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I do have the cold storage is you know, not easy to spend by design, and so it hasn't come up for me yet, because I've just been in a situation where I haven't been able to consistently run my full node, and so for me to be withdrawing from exchanges, I want to be checking that on the node itself, and so the amount that I have been stacking has just been on the exchange. So, I mean, part of the way that I think about it though is that the Bitcoin on an exchange on something like Cash App is less of a liability than cash would be. One, because of the inflation, but two, because it's in my mind less likely to be frozen at this point. You know, you're talking about Canada, right, where they're freezing bank accounts. I guess it could just be just my naivety to think that like it's fine. But to me it's kind of been all right with me to keep a decent amount on an exchange and then roll some of that over onto cold storage. So I haven't had a need to like put any onto the exchange, because I think that kind of opens up some other questions too, as to like, well, where is that Bitcoin from? How long have you had that? What price did you buy that at? And having to calculate that sounds like more of a headache to me than just to have it be a in and out on the exchange. Do you know what I mean? Like if you're introducing new Bitcoin to Cash App, to me that sounds like something I would have to think carefully about, and not that I couldn't do it, but it would just be more of a headache than to just have that extra buffer on Cash App to cover the volatility, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's definitely something that's like my strategy with doing Level, because I wasn't ever really selling Bitcoin other than under the table when I'm on Zero before this. So I was waiting. Like I didn't send them Bitcoin. I sent them paychecks, and I had a check that came to me. So I cashed put the check into my credit union and transferred it over to Level. And I'm trying to avoid the same thing that you are there, because it does create, you know, it's something I can manage. Any exchange I've ever used, they have all of the records if I needed the bill of sale or something to prove, sure, like, hey, yes, I actually did buy this there.
Something I did come across, which was the exchange that I use does allow for Lightning, you know, to pay, make payments out to Lightning addresses. So I've done some of that, like keeping a kind of toy amount of money on a cell phone that's on a Lightning wallet. And initially kind of cooked my noodle, thinking like, okay, wait, I've got this stuff from the exchange onto a Lightning wallet. Does this ever get back on chain? How does that work? Like having to try to figure that out was kind of interesting too, to make sure I really understood what these kind of custodial wallets like Blue Wallet are, you know, like, so trying to figure out like how I could go a full loop then from withdrawing something to a Lightning address, and then how do I get this back to actually being funds that are my own on chain somehow. So
yeah, it's possible, but it just adds a layer of step. I mean, just a couple more steps, I guess, if it's on a like a custodial Blue wallet or something.
Have you used that Blue wallet, Lightning, Rallo, or Buddha for them? How's your experience been with it?
Not the custodial. I don't think I have. Okay. I've just used it to manage my own.
To your own one? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
No, I have used the custodial one, and it's easy to set up, but I haven't used. So you're saying you can use that to manage a full node with Lightning stacked on top of it, right?
Yep.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I've had issues, for whatever reason, there's been weird issues with trying to, I don't know if it's just my phone or whatever it is, but there's a bunch of different, like I've also used Zap and Blue or Zeus are two other wallets to use or to control your Lightning node, which have been, I think Zap, I really like Zap.
Same here. I've used that before for the node. That one was pretty sweet.
I think Zeus is supposed to roll out. I think they just released their beta of their next release. And I think they're supposed to make a lot of improvements, because it kind of looks like it's like if Zeus was like Firefox or something, or Google Chrome, Zeus is like Netscape or Internet Explorer. The way it kind of looks, it doesn't look slick and as modern as the other things. And, you know, it still works. I use it. I think they're getting ready to roll something out that's a little more updated, if you will. I've used Breeze. I sent, I think it was like a million sats I sent to them. And that's non-custodial. It's you actually control those keys. They just create and manage the Lightning channels on your behalf. And they do like the turbo channel stuff. So you can send the Bitcoin to Breeze and they send you the Bitcoin that you're supposed to be getting sent and give you that kind of those sats up front while they're opening channels in the background or something. So it's cool stuff. But like trying to use that, I've been pretty disappointed with payments failing like all the time.
Oh, okay.
For stuff that I would think would be reason pretty well connected stuff. Maybe it's me. I know a lot of people use Breeze and they love it. So maybe it's just me. Or maybe it's just, you know, maybe it's just the, you know, kind of a new thing. And I'm not trying to say that it's a bad wallet or a bad service because, I mean, they're doing some pretty cutting edge stuff. So, but I guess my point is to like, if you're trying to use Lightning Network to kind of live off, I don't know that I would use Breeze. I've had much better success routing payments through my own Lightning node where I've managed the channels without even like doing much management, like thinking through it. I remember Slappy and I have talked about this where one day all of a sudden like, holy cow, we're routing payments. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, I was just kind of haphazardly creating channels, but
yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I need to get back on that. I had some decent sized channels, but I was never, I don't think I checked, you know, you could see that, what is it, balance of Satoshis or one of these things for Lightning. And I don't think I was ever ever actually routing anything. So maybe I'll get back around to that at some point. But no, I mean, I don't pay for anything in Bitcoin. That's the thing, you know, I've just using this credit card and like maybe that'll change some, it'll be some years down the road where I'm like either moved somewhere else where there's more people using it or in general, there'll be more people willing to accept it. But I've never really spent any Bitcoin on goods and services really.
Yeah, it's been few and far between. I mean, there's some stuff you can do if you want. Like early on and when I was on Zero, I was using Pay with Moon to create the digital Visa gift cards and use Bit Refill a little bit. So there are ways to do it, but it adds inconvenience. So I just went back to using my credit card like you do. It also helps me hold on to the Bitcoin for a little bit longer, hoping to get some, the price increase. But where do you kind of see yourself going from here with this? Do you have any ideas for what you want to try to tackle next with Get On Zero or where you see things heading?
I'm not sure totally. I mean, I'm in a situation where I've got a contract for a certain duration of time that's kind of fixed. So it's not very long, but it's for the next year and a half, 2 years, I won't need to be, changing anything. I'm pretty settled in where I am. So I've just been kind of at peace with whatever happens with it. But I do think like it's been weird kind of like in an inverted way to be just kind of hoping that my next paycheck buys more Bitcoin. So if I guess that means it goes down, you know, so I'm not in a situation where I think I'm going to need to touch it. Maybe something unexpected would happen to me, but just going to see how this goes for the next 2 years or so and ride this thing out. I think I'm not totally like I am into Bitcoin, and I have been I have a relative who bought Bitcoin at like $300 and sold it at $1,000. So I've kind of like, you know, and that was way back in the day. So I don't know. I'm not like full on convinced that it's going to do everything it promises. We there's no way of knowing that. I think it is the best option for me to be trying to preserve my wealth and try to grow wealth right now. I'm not talking about like other like shit coins or anything like that. I just and maybe it's not really anything I could foresee, but I'm not like, I don't know. I've made a commitment to kind of ride this out for the next couple of years while I have this job and this job security, and then, and kind of say, I'm not going to sell any of this stuff, up until then. Maybe at that point I would need to put a down payment for a house or something, and then I would be, you know, moving a significant amount to do something like that. But for the time being, I'm kind of fine with just stacking and staying. It is good to be on Zero. I feel like it does fit with my just kind of reawoken some of my political thoughts about, like, you know, where what these dollars fund and whether or not I support that or not. You know, definitely not. So that's been good, I think. But I think I'm kind of comfortable in this spot here for now, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. So because I think you're probably the first person maybe that we've talked to that has been doing this. It may not be with Bitcoin for the whole time, but, you know, you're basically on Zero Fiat for a while. So you have a little bit different perspective. You've been doing this for a little bit longer than a lot of us. What advice do you have to give to someone who's kind of thinking about it, not sure about it, but wants to kind of kick the tires?
I think, I mean, like, for me, I was into Robinhood in around 2016 or so, and it was smooth because you could buy and sell stuff without having a transaction fee. You could withdraw to your bank without any transaction fee. So I just don't see why anybody would keep any money in a bank account. Like, if you want to buy the S&P 500 or the 3X S&P 500, if you're got more of you know, taste for risk or something like that, like, do that. Anything is better than a dollar. Like, that's what I think I've come to the conclusion of, like, really what possibly could happen if you put $1,000 in a bank account. Like, there's no, you know, something I did do before I got on Zero, when I was like kind of going down this Bitcoin rabbit hole, was I drove around to about like five or six different banks. And I just asked people, like, okay, let's say I got some money, I want to put it in a savings account. And they just laughed at me. Like, they were just like, or they wouldn't answer. They're like, well, you can't, like, don't embarrass us. Like, don't make us say that. I'm like, well, what's the return on a savings account? And they'll tell me it's 0.03% or something. Yeah. Some bullshit. Like, it was
50 grand in there, we'll give you 50 cents.
It was crazy. I was like trying to do the math. I was like, so you're telling me exactly that, like, that you're giving me, you know, pennies on 50 grand. If I put 30 grand in, you'd give me like maybe a dollar. Like, but I went to like six different banks. I went to all the banks. There's only that many of them. I went to all of them. I asked the same question. I got the same answer. I was like, well, do you think it's coming up anytime soon? Are we going to go negative? And they wouldn't really answer those questions. So then I was like, okay, fuck it. Like, this is completely screwed. The more that I, like, if you honestly don't see the problem with that, I can't help you. Like, I think that's where I started from, is like looking at, if you want to hold your money in there, like, that's is terrible. So you might as well ride it out with volatility in something that's functioning kind of as money, with the S&P or with the NASDAQ, whatever you're into. Or, you know, have something that you can, that's actually material in that you can control. It's just as immaterial, I guess, as any number on a screen. But I don't know where those, you know, companies stocks come from. I have no idea. There's not a lot of transparency in my mind about that kind of stuff. There's a lot of transparency in that I can audit a ledger and make sure that I have X percent of the total amount. So that's my appeal to someone. I mean, if you're doing Robinhood, like, they're screwing you too. That's kind of a wake up I had at the point when the Wall Street Bet stuff was going on, during the summer of 2019. I don't say exactly when that was going off, but, the idea that Robinhood is selling user data two hedge funds to bet against users. And so even when the users want to gang up on some hedge fund, they're still going to get the short end of the stick, was discouraging. So you know, buy Bitcoin and get out of that rat race, I guess.
Yeah, it's your story of going around and asking about the interest rates. I love to tell the story when I was, I don't know if I was 16 or 17 or 18, and my dad gave me the keys, if you will, to my credit union account. And he was explaining it to me and said, all right, this is your checking account. You got these other savings account, and there's something that's a money market account. But basically, you know, explained it like I was five. He's like, it's like a savings account, but you get a nice interest rate on it. And it was like, I think 5.5% or 6.5%. And I remember being like, oh, wow, this is really cool. And I can, you know, doing all these, and man, I can make, and then, you know, it was given that return for a while. And then it just started slipping away, and then it just fell off a cliff. And then I don't even know what it is now, but it might even be less than the checking account. The interest
rate.
That's
funny. It's just, I remember having absurd. A savings account with, it was, it's now Capital One, but it was an online bank. It was like the ING, I think it was. I can't remember what they called it. But it was over 6% for savings. And I remember they would show you how much you earned every month. It was earned, whatever, were paid. It was kind of cool. And it just, I remember watching it. I would get an email. It's like, now down to 5.75, now down to 5.5. And it just kept going and going. That was back. I mean, that was probably like, I don't know, 2006, 7, 8 in that area. It was depressing to watch the percentage continue to drop every single month.
And you these fake outs now where they're saying they're going to raise rates. Like, that's something I have taken away from Bitcoin Twitter is like, you can't taper a Ponzi. Like, this stuff is, there's no, not without like seriously disrupting things. Is there going to be any kind of meaningful, where they're talking about basis points for how much to raise it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's insane. When you think about like in the '80s, when interest rates were like 15% to 18% or something, my dad would say, well, I was paying bought a car. I was paying 18% interest rate. And so, yeah, but what was your savings account interest rate?
Right.
Oh, the same thing. So,
well, that's what I've been kind of in. I feel like I've been backed into a corner with Bitcoin. Like, I'm not like a full rabid dog like this, you know. I don't know. Like, I feel like I still have some maybe, I don't know. But it's the best option right now, and I'm gonna see what it does. But I feel like I've been more backed into a corner of like, well, I can't really. What am I gonna go buy gold? Like, I don't think. I just don't think that's going to be feasible, especially if it's to do that on a monthly basis and to be paying the markup on something like metals is high. So I'm going to be buying and selling those to pay my credit card. Like, it seems ridiculous. So,
Right. And with really no practical way of taking custody of it either, especially when you compare it to Bitcoin. I mean, thank goodness for Bitcoin, because, right. I mean, what would we be doing? I mean, we'd just be taking it, because what else would we be able to do? I mean, can you imagine these guys in Canada, with not having Bitcoin as a way to fall back? And or, I mean, the get on zero people, I mean, we're just probably just ahead of maybe what's going to come anyway. I mean, I don't know. I don't like to talk, you know, doomsday-y or anything, and I don't know that. I would tend to, if I had to make a prediction, I would say that no, we're not getting all of our bank accounts, you know, right.
Confiscated.
Maybe some people might, you know, there's going to be definitely some people, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, the world over. Mm-hmm. But there's that threat. It could happen. And I, like, if they did it to me, if they did it to me right now, it would be a pain in the butt. But I wouldn't be like, what am I going to do? Like I wouldn't be terrified about mm-hmm. it. I'd be more annoyed because it's like, you're going to make me like have to go on to BitRefill and pay with Moon and bug my friends to sell them Bitcoin for cash a lot more. But like I have, you know, they can't take my money from me now. Like they can't right. remove my access from me moving my money. I just don't have that ability to have a convenient off ramp to the foreign currency that these analog people, fiat analogers, as a heavily armed clown likes to call them, or something like that. He calls them analog money, but whatever he calls it. But I mean, yeah, we've moved on basically, and it's just a matter of making it convenient for us to interact with people that haven't moved on yet. But
right.
I think that number is going to steadily increase in our favor of people that are adopting the new money. So we'll see. It's kind of what a time to be alive. I find myself saying that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so much happening in the world right now, and it's happening at lightning speed. And yeah, it's just crazy. So Buddha, I know that you are not in a convenient time zone to be doing this, so we don't want to keep you on that much longer. But did you have anything else that you wanted to cover or say or anything?
I'm trying to think. No, not necessarily. I think that was my my contribution to this Get on Zero conversation would be, you know, maybe for people who are using other, you know, even non-Bitcoin things like stocks or Robinhood or something like that as a checking account. It's not that different. It's not you know, there's the tools in place make this super easy. I think it's not that there's nothing to it. There's a lot that I feel like I've gained from these conversations around Get on Zero, but the actual nuts and bolts of it are like, I don't think there's much that there's no excuses. There's no excuses for holding dollars in a bank account. If you want to hold other assets, go ahead, but there's no excuse for holding shit coins in a bank account. That's my I'll sign off with that maybe.
Awesome. So yeah, we appreciate you coming on, and I said this in the beginning of the episode, but Buddha reached out to us and said, hey, I can come on and talk about my Get on Zero experience. And I said, absolutely. Having like the influencer type people and everything is great and wonderful. And, you know, I'm not going to turn them down if they want to come and talk about Get on Zero. But I think it's really important that just the average people like us are the ones that talk about doing it, because, you know, it's not, we're trying to make it so that everyone can not be intimidated by doing this, that it's mm-hmm. that it's not just for the, you know, the super wealthy, you know, technical
the shadowy super coders.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I was trying to say, the shadowy super coders or the super wealthy. It's for regular people, whether you've got a lot of money or no money. Like this is for everyone. And so we want everyone's perspectives and everyone's thoughts on this. So, Buddha, you want to tell everyone where they can find you if you want them to find you?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't know. You could put my Twitter handle. I don't even know. My Twitter handle was supposed to be Buddha Gen Christian. It's kind of a play on words, but then, I think that was either taken or something. So it's like Buddha Cry One or something at Twitter.
It's funny because I always thought that your handle was Boot Again Christian, because I guess I saw the first bit of it and just assumed the rest and thought it was.
I did get my point across then. That's
yeah, great. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I at least projected it on you.
Right. Well, yeah. Thanks for having me on, guys. Nice talking to y'all.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we'll have that on the show notes page, mcflugel.com/293, as well as getonzerofiat.com/12. We will link to Buddha's Twitter handle there. And yeah, go on, get on zerofiat.com. We're trying to build that out. I said it last week, but if you want to offer some help or anything, reach out to me and we'd love to have you support it in any way with if you want to write or just kind of manage stuff there, whatever it is, just reach out and we'll figure out something for you to do. So, all right. Thanks for everyone for listening and we will catch you next week.
Peace.